Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I am Francis Schott, and I'm here with Mark Pascal. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every weekday from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and reach us through our website at www.restaurantguysradio.com. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Palomine.
Isn't that a horse? That's Palomino.
Palomino. That's actually a grape,
too. It's a grape, too. Yeah, cool.
How you doing?
Let's make that the last bad joke of the day.
I doubt it.
All right. Well, we'll try.
I don't think so. Francis, so I was really encouraged today when I saw you pulling up in the stage left van.
Yeah.
I realized that you still don't have your car back. But the one thing I did realize as I'm watching you drive this 18-foot van here, that the sum and total of the seats of vehicles that you own is three. You own a two-seat car, a one-seat motorcycle, three.
Yeah, and I'm driving a van. I'm driving the Stage Left van, which we used to go to the fish market. It smells a little like fish for all you out there in radio land. Good thing it's not. Good thing you don't have the smell-o-matic radio.
Now the morning makes a little more sense to me.
We have great guests today.
We sure do.
And if you're ever going to listen to the show all the way through, today is the day to do it. We have in studio with us Tim Olson, who is a friend of ours, an all-around groovy dude, and a great winemaker from California who's come in, flown all the way across the country, pretty much to do a dinner with us at Stage Left tonight in New Brunswick. So if you want to meet him, you can meet him tonight, and we'll be talking to him on the air in a moment or two. And then at the half hour, we have joining the show Ruth Reichel. Ruth Reichel is the was the restaurant critic for the New York Times for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. For the national section.
And she is now the editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, and she has also written a book.
She's actually written several books, Francis. Are you aware of that?
I am, but her most recent book is about her time at the New York Times as the most powerful restaurant critic in the world and the various disguises she used and the people she encountered.
Actually, a very, very fun read.
A tremendous, tremendous read. I just finished it last night, and it's called Garlic and Sapphires by Ruth Reichel.
That's funny, because I finished it at about 8:45 this morning. I said, oh, no, she's coming on the show. I got to read the last 20 pages.
last night's a relative term for us restaurateurs. So yes. That's the show. So stay tuned to talk to formerly the most powerful restaurant critic in the world, who changed the way the New York Times reviews and changed the way that New York eats.
For sure. Francis, you and I had kind of an interesting late evening last night.
And I blame Tim Olson.
Our revenge for keeping us up till 2:30 in the morning, Mr. Olson, is that we made you come to the studio this morning with us and get up bright and early.
Winemaker Tim Olson, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you.
You've joined us by telephone before, but it's so much better in person, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's great, except for the rain.
Except for that I come from a beautiful place in California where it's sunny all the time and I ride my motorcycle.
Well, and I left rain, so I thought I could get some sunshine out here in the east.
Yeah. You guys have had a lot of rain out there this season, huh?
Yeah, and it's creating a few worries about this year's vintage, actually. Mm-hmm.
So what are the concerns for having all this rain in a season?
Well, this happened in 2003 as well, and when you get a lot of groundwater early in the season, it kind of jump starts the vines, and it's going to put a lot of emphasis on the vegetative growth. And we don't want too much of that. We want the vine to grow balanced so that when it comes time to ripen the fruit and mature the phenolics and the tannins, we can get a nice balanced wine. And so it's going to take some extra work this year in the vineyards.
So what do you do about that? How do you fix that?
I call up the growers and say, fix it.
Just so everyone knows who Tim is, Tim has worked for a number of wineries over the years. He's worked as a cooper over the years. And he makes some of our favorite Pinot Noir.
Soon to be famous.
His wines are very hard to get, and we carry them in New Jersey at Stage Left. But the interesting thing that a lot of New World wines face is that they're not very age-worthy. Now, you've been making wines that use the Tarras label in 97 to 99, and we were drinking some 99 wines last night, which are now 6 years old, which is some significant age for California wines, and the wines are just singing.
Yeah, they really were.
Is that a goal of yours, to make age-worthy wines?
Yes, it is. But really, that's more of the afterthought. What I'm looking to make is a balanced wine, and in my opinion, balance is really what it's all about. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be thought that tannins were all important to age a wine. Mm-hmm. Then it was thought acidity was really important. I think ultimately, first of all, it's all important, but really it's about balance.
You told us a story last night about how you wound up sort of getting pushed into making a California port, which is an unusual type of wine. It's a stronger wine, and it's a sweet wine that's left. Well, tell us how that happened.
Well, you know, I'm not a huge sweet wine fan, but I really do love a good glass of port, and I thought it would be kind of fun to make a Zinfandel port and just wasn't sure when it was going to happen. But we happened to be getting Zinfandel fruit from a great little vineyard up in Mendocino where the acidity retains, you know, pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, sweetness and acidity balance each other out. And so I thought, well, we got a big ripening curve late in August in 2000. And
I just want to stop you for one second. I think that maybe one thing that people don't realize. A great sweet wine must have great acidity to remain great. And you don't perceive it as much, but it's definitely in there. For usually if you have a great sweet wine, it's got great acidity
and,
at the same time.
And what Tim says when he says that this is a wine, that these are grapes that retain their acidity, with most grapes that don't, what happens is the grapes get very sweet, the acidity drops out, and it becomes like a lollipop. It's all sweet and no acid and structure. So you have these great grapes and that retain acidity, and?
Well, Zinfandel is a unique variety in that it ripens unevenly just on the same cluster itself. You can have raisins and ripe berries and green berries all on the same cluster, not just in different parts of the vineyard like most varietals. And so what happens is once you crush the Zinfandel and you get it into the fermenter, the sugar soaks out of the raisins and can drive the Brix or the sugar measurement through the roof. And then, of course, that can translate into alcohol production. And so in California, because we have an abundance of sunshine, we're always battling that balance between ripeness and alcohol.
Just to explain what Tim's talking about is where the alcohol in wine comes from is the sugar. The yeast eats sugar and produces alcohol. So when you have a very sweet grape juice, you might get a sweet wine or you might get a wine that's not so sweet but has a lot of alcohol. And so you have this wine from up north. It's got some raisins in it. It's a little maybe too sweet to make the still wine.
Yeah, normally in a good vintage, you know, my Zinfandel will come in between the 24 and 25 Brix range and maybe soak up to 26.
And again, Brix is a measurement of sugar.
Yes. In this particular vintage, they came in at about 27 and soaked up to 31, 32 Brix, which off the charts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I decided, hey, this would be the time to try some port. So we got the fermentation started, and it started slowing down when we got down to about 10% sugar or Brix, at which point I then spiked it with some grain alcohol from grapes, you know, grape alcohol.
So the same way you would make a port?
The same way you did in college, Mark.
Pretty much.
I believe that was Kool-Aid.
Anyway, go ahead.
So I just did a one-barrel experiment, and, you know, a lot of experiments don't turn out. This one just happened to work very well. And so I put it into a one-year-old French barrel, let it age for about 15 months, and bottled it. And
what year was this?
This was in 2000.
Well, this is in 2000. We haven't tried the wine yet. We're going to sample it for the first time at dinner tonight at the restaurant.
Well, about 2 hours before dinner.
Right, right. Well, but it's very rare and very small production. So there's not a lot of California port out there, is there?
No, there's a little bit. There's a couple of places out there that do it, but it's really not. They don't sell enough real port in California to really justify it.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk with Tim Olson a little bit more, and we're going to talk about wines and corks and closures and the Grateful Dead. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. A little later in the show, we're going to have Ruth Reichel, editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, former New York Times restaurant critic. But right now, in the studio with us, we have Tim Olson of Olson Ogden Wines, a fine winemaker.
And his partner, John Ogden, is driving around the state doing the real work while Tim sits here and talks with us. Hello, John, out there in New Jersey land. So I did the intro before, and we were talking about some technical stuff in the last segment. And we're talking about Brix levels and acidity levels and alcohol levels and those kinds of things. Now, obviously, you're a master of the chemistry and science of wine. But last night, after a few glasses of wine, you were telling me that you play the Grateful Dead for your wines.
Absolutely.
You want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, you know, the way I make wine, it's a living product. You know, I adhere more to like a biodynamic approach where it's not a sterile thing or a scientific thing. It's, you know, it's got science and art, but I lean towards the artistic side. my wines need to be in a happy place. I mean, they've got yeast in them, they've got bacteria, they've got things going on, and so music, you know, puts out a good vibe, and of course, the Dead are one of my favorite bands.
Mm-hmm. Well, last night, you bring this up, last night we're having dinner, and we had a bunch of the 99 Tarius wines, which you were the winemaker for, and Francis and I were talking about the fact that the 2000 Tarius wines, which you got the wine all the way to barrel.
And we had tasted in barrel.
And we tasted in barrel with you out in California. And
we loved them.
And
then you left Tarius before they were bottled.
Before they were bottled.
And Tarius bottled them.
Mm-hmm. And you came to us last night and we asked you, the wines were terrible. The 2000 wines, when they finally got to us, were terrible. Why don't you tell us what you said, your reasons for the wines being terrible after you left?
Oh, this is going to sound so California. Well, my feeling has been for the longest time that if you took the same grapes from the same vineyard on the same day and gave it to five winemakers who followed the same recipe, you'd still get five different wines.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the person, some of their energy, some of their attitude, some of their spirit gets
their force, as it were.
Absolutely. Same thing with chefs, right? I mean, mm-hmm. they can follow the same recipes, but they each make it slightly differently, and that's because a little of you gets into what you're doing. And
I want to
share an artist or a photographer.
I have to share with you this story.
So it was the bad karma? Is that what you're telling us that happened?
It was different karma. That's all I'm saying. It was different karma. Well, I'm telling you, I have a funny related story. I was out with Paul Hobbs, and we were talking. Paul Hobbs is another winemaker who makes wine in California, Argentina, and Europe now, but he still makes wine on a small scale. And we were walking on a catwalk by some open-top fermenters. What open-top fermenters are? They're just what they sound like. The fermentation happens outside in a tank that has a screen so, you know, bugs don't get in it. But it's open-top. You can see the bubbling thing. And it's
well, big bugs.
A very large amount of wine. Yeah, exactly. Yeast, you can consider a bug. That, you know. But and so he related the story about his daughter, Augustina, who is a beautiful and charming 11-year-old now, but at the time was a 3 or 4-year-old. And he said, yeah, last week I was walking up here with Augustina. And I love Augustina. She calls me Tio Francisco. But she said, yeah, I was walking up here by the catwalk with the open top fermenters. And she's a precocious child, that Augustina. And she ran away from me. And she speaks Spanish as her first language. And she says, Papi, uvos, which means grapes. And she runs for the open top fermenters and jumps in. And Paul runs after her. That's very dangerous, actually. For the fermentation
right.
produces a lot of CO2. Paul runs after her. And literally says he grabs her by her ankles and pulls her out of the open-top fermenter of Cabernet Sauvignon. And he's like, and I have my purple child, and I realize, number one, that we're alive, and number two, I'm in a lot of trouble with my wife once I hose my child down. But what he says is, you know, there's something in the 98 Cabernet that is, you know, got a certain essence of Augustina. Really, the essence of. There's something a little unquantifiable. It's that I dunked my child in it just briefly.
Well, you know,
that's
truth
not
in
what
that.
You're talking about, though.
No,
though.
But last night I talked to you guys about a movie I just saw called mm-hmm. What the Bleep Do We Know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole, you know, what's the meaning of life, you know, from a quantum mechanics point of view. And in it, there's a scene where there's a Japanese photographer who has been photographing water in bottles with words taped onto them. And just the words and the thought behind the words made a dramatic difference in the photos. The positive words like love and happiness created these beautiful crystalline snowflake-like type pictures at a molecular level. And words like hate and I want to kill you created these very distorted, macabre type images, and all from the power of thought.
Wow.
And it really... And it's realistic stuff. I mean, I found it on the internet.
So it's the Zen of winemaking.
And it's called What the Bleep Do We Know?
Yeah.
Wow, we're gonna find that and put
it's
that up.
It's a fascinating movie.
Gotta watch it.
And just the idea, though, confirmed what I'd been feeling all along, which is, you know, a part of you gets into whatever you do.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I know this sounds so Californian.
And, you know, but
well, I think that you're saying spiritually a part of you gets into whatever you do, but I think you do. You do project yourself into the projects that you do, and there is such a thing as positive energy, and you can make good things happen for yourself by being positive and being positive with the people around you. And you know, we talk about karma, and we joked about it a little bit earlier, but what comes around goes around has been a saying that's been around for a long time, because that's really the way the world works, I think.
That's so
well,
beautiful.
And as we said last night, you know, why the wines didn't turn out is because I got them started. You guys tasted them. They were doing okay. I didn't finish them.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, certainly science is in play, and UC Davis does a phenomenal job in training people to a certain level. But the other side of it is that not everybody that graduates UC Davis with a degree in enology makes 95-point wines.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the other thing is very interesting is you used a word before, Tim, called biodynamics. And biodynamics, you know, we know how it relates to the body, but there's a way of farming called biodynamic farming, which is actually based on ancient methods of farming for the alchemists. You know, people think the alchemists were only concerned with turning lead into gold, but the alchemists were the scientists of their day. And the alchemical or biodynamic methods of farming have a lot to do. I mean, they go a little far for me with, you know, burying the eye of a newt in the vineyard with a crystal in its head or something.
Don't forget the virgin sacrifices.
Well, I'm leaving that one alone. I'm walking right away from that. I don't know where to go.
I need to make an announcement to our audience. Tim has just agreed to. We're going to start doing an Ask the Winemaker feature on this show about once a week, and Tim has just agreed to be the winemaker to do that.
He's shaking his head because this is the first he's heard of.
Right, maybe he hasn't. Maybe he's just about to agree to do that. Maybe it's not quite just agreed, but he's just about to be our.
As long as the check's in the mail, Mark.
Be a very small one. Yeah, but so you can email your questions if you have questions about winemaking to us through our website at restaurantguysradio.com. I'll put up an Ask the Winemaker link, and we'll forward those questions
we'll spend
to
a
Tim.
A couple of minutes a week with a winemaker, and Tim will be the lead winemaker in those.
I'd be happy to, because one of the things I want to do is demystify the process. I mean, certainly it's steeped in a lot of lore and tradition and romance, but the reality is, and I try to keep a humble attitude, that, look, it's grape juice with some alcohol in it.
Mm-hmm.
It
right.
happens to sometimes be really good, and it works well with food, but the point is, I started off making homemade wine in the garage.
All right, we'll come back in a few minutes, and we'll be talking more about biodynamic winemaking, no more about the Grateful Dead, but with Tim Olson, who is a fabulous winemaker from California who's come out here to do a dinner. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:25.
Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
You're back once again with The Restaurant Guys, and we're talking with Tim Olson, who is an incredible winemaker from California, who's come in studio with us today, and he'll be at Stage Left Restaurant tonight doing a dinner. I think we even have a couple of seats left for that.
For the Olson-Ogden dinner.
So if you want to come to try a number of different wines, including a bunch of back vintages, impossible-to-find wines that Tim brought with him, give us a call at 732-828-4444. That's 732-828-4444. That's the restaurant number, or you can try us through email, and we'll get you in. We were talking about biodynamic wines before and organic winemaking and playing the Grateful Dead for your wines. And there are two schools of thought on that. One is I'd like to believe that, and I don't know whether I do or I don't. But I know that winemakers who are biodynamic and organic tend to make better wines consistently. The question that I have is, you know, maybe it's because they're harnessing these forces, these, you know, alchemical forces, these, you know, mystical forces. And maybe it's because to be a biodynamic winemaker and to not use a lot of chemicals and a lot of technology, you've just got to pay such close attention. You've got to walk your vineyards every day. You've got to arrest problems early. And, you know, biodynamic winemakers, they know their vines. They know their grapes. They know their wine and what's going on every minute. What do you think about that? Do you think it's just that people pay much more attention, or do you think it's the actual energy or a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both. You do pay more attention because you don't have some of the safety nets. You know, I can't go mm-hmm. there and spike it with chemicals. That's just not part of the program.
Right.
The other side of it is there is a force in nature that creates our seasons and our cycles and grows vegetables and things throughout the year. And biodynamics really is just trying to get in line with that. It's
you know, it's
almost like
a feng
shui approach, mm-hmm. just getting in rhythm and the flow of nature's own energy.
That's pretty cool.
That
well, Tim, I want to thank you for taking the time.
Thanks so much for being here
studio.
With us today.
Hey, it's been really great.
Making the trip all the way down to the studio, too. Mm-hmm.
And if you look forward to the dinner tonight, it should be a lot of fun.
It will be great, I promise.
It will be. Because, you know, that's how wine is supposed to be had, is with food. And very often we tend to think of wine as a contest, like what got how many points and which wine is better than what. And it really gets away from what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So if you want to learn more about Olson-Ogden wines, which is Tim's current project, you can't get any of the older vintages from Tarius, I'm afraid. Not any of the good ones, anyway. But you can find out more about Olson-Ogden wines through our website, which is www.restaurantguysradio.com.
And there are actually some of, we have a few of the Tarius 99s, which was the last vintage that
a few.
Tim made.
A few from our cellar. And if you want to know, if you have questions about wine, we're going to make this a regular feature. Mm-hmm. You can email us through our website, and I'll try and get a link up there to the Ask the Winemaker segment. And Tim is going to be our resident winemaker. He'll usually be calling in. It's a long way to fly just for a radio show. And you can find out more about Tim Olson through our website at www.restaurantguysradio.com. After the news, we have Ruth Reichel, who was the restaurant critic for the New York Times for many years, is the current editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, and has a new book out called Garlic and Sapphires, and she'll be talking with us about all those fabulous things after the news. Central Jersey, 1450, time is 11:30.